Hello and welcome to Animal Voices. This is Lauren and I'm co-hosting with Narsha.
Hi there.
And we have a past wonderful host of Animal Voices, Mira Saleh. For those of you who don't know her amazing work in a variety of different communities, we're going to be talking with her about a lot of different types of activism in her history and some of the stuff that she's done and maybe even some of the highlights of the past Animal Voices.
One of the reasons we had Mira Saleh on the show today is that she's been chosen to be the Grand Marshal of the Pride Parade this weekend, and I think she's going to take advantage of that situation to promote some animal liberation stuff. So maybe you can start by telling us a little bit about that.
Okay, so what happened is I was elected the Grand Marshal for this year's Pride Parade, and it's really funny because I've done a lot of work for the last 10 years in the queer community, educating people about transsexual issues and sex workers' rights issues. So I think that part of the reason I was elected as Grand Marshal is in recognition of the work I've done for transsexual people, but also because of the work I've done educating queer people and spending so much time with them, educating them about transsexual and sex workers' rights issues. So when they called me to say that I was the Grand Marshal, I didn't even know. I've worked with queer people, and I feel like I have a big foot in the queer community, but at the same time, I haven't been part of a queer organization for, I don't know, like over a decade, you know. Last time, I think I was part of a queer organization meeting or organizing meeting or something like this was Queer Nation, maybe in 89 or 1990, something like that in Montreal. So I don't know how organizations function. I don't know how they're structured. I don't know how things work. And I didn't know what a Grand Marshal was. So I said, oh, what's that? And they told me I'd be in a car at the front of the parade. And then right away, it clicked in my head. I said, woo, that's a high-profile position. And I thought, right away in my head, I thought, oh, my God, I'm going to jump on this to do something animal rights or animal liberation related. Because last year there was a group of us transsexual and queer people who are vegan, vegetarian and animal rights activists who were had a little contingent in the parade, and I think we were maybe about 15-20 of us, and we had nice signs and everything, and we had actually a very good receptions from people on from the audience all throughout the parade, except that we were a very small group and we felt sort of a bit isolated. And and what was sort of sad is that in the media, when they broadcasted the parade, we looked at it after because we recorded it on the media. I think it was broadcasted on two stations. Both stations didn't show our little contingent, animal rights contingent.
Oh, really?
So I thought, well, this year, as the Grand Marshal, they can't jump it, you know, so we'll make sure that animal liberation... Yeah, we'll make sure that animal liberation is seen this year at the parade. So I decided to use this opportunity to highlight some animal rights issues, and it's been very difficult to try to find out exactly what to do. There are so many animal rights issues, and it's very difficult because it's such a huge crowd to do something that will bring a message that is clear to people, and animal rights issues tend sometimes to be complicated also because it's a pride day and it's about celebration and everything. I understand, like, there's groups like PETA who do all this kind of actions on the street where they dress up as teddy bears and animals and things like that, and I do understand why they're doing this. I do understand that they feel that's not confrontational, that by doing it that way people will stop and talk to them because it's cute, and that they can get a message across to people. So I do understand all of that. At the same time, I can't help then to feel within myself that there's a bit of trivializing of the issues often I see in that. I mean, if we're doing something about, you know, women being raped, children being sexually abused, people being murdered and anything, we wouldn't be putting on a little puppet show. So it talks a lot about how the kind of way animal rights and animal liberation issues are so low in terms of people's priority and in the mass consciousness that we're stuck to do puppet show to talk about it. So it's not, even though it's not something I condemn and I understand why they're doing it, it's not something that that's my style. So I wanted to do something with a little bit more bite, and I just ended up feeling it was too difficult to do something that was raising one animal rights issue because there's too many of them. So since it's Pride Day and people are celebrating who they are as individuals, and including in that, you know, diversity of identities and a diversity of sexual orientations and genders, it clicked in my head, oh, why don't we celebrate the pride that we have and the activists who are taking so many risks in putting their bodies and their lives and their freedoms on the line to liberate animals from places of exploitation and abuse. And I thought that we could organize a little performance action around my convertible car where we would highlight the actions that these brave individuals are doing, because I find that even though I don't feel I'm personally, emotionally, psychologically stable enough to engage in such actions, I choose to do my activism in a different way than these individuals. I don't have the courage and the strength and the stability to take these kinds of risks. I think that the least I can do is to not only not condemn what they're doing, but to tell people this is something we should be supporting. Mm-hmm. If transsexuals were all incarcerated because it was illegal to be transsexuals, I would be hoping that you would be in your pride parade saying, let's celebrate the people who break into these jails and liberate transsexuals. Mm-hmm. So I think that the least we can do if we're not ourselves engaging in these activities is to highlight the work that these people are doing and honor them for the risk and the extreme courage and the ramifications that they're stuck to live with in their everyday lives, the persecutions that they go through at the hands of the government and things like that.
I remember last year listening to, I think it was a radio broadcast, and they said, this year there was even an animal rights vegetarian contingent.
So they said,
well, what's next? I mean, you know, is every special interest group going to have their own little section? And I raised that to a friend, I think it was last night, and they said, well, Coca-Cola can have a float. I'm sure animal rights can have a float. And I was thinking, yeah, that's kind of true. But I was wondering, how do you respond to that? People, you know, saying that you're taking away from pride? Or
well, I think there's a huge number of people in the queer community and people who are in periphery. Like, I call myself, I don't identify as queer anymore, but I'm somebody who is on the kind of periphery, on the border of the queer community. I do have a few toes. I used to say I have a big foot in it, and I more have a few toes in it. So there's a lot of people who are either queer or on the periphery or have a foot in the queer community who are constantly criticizing every year the Pride March for being too corporate oriented, for being too much about just partying and not enough highlighting of issues like racism and capitalism and, you know, and sexism and this and even homophobia, that is too much about all a bunch of people jumping around and partying, that there isn't enough politics that is thrown into the parade and the celebration. So how do I respond to that? I respond by saying it seems obvious to me that there's a lot of people out there who have politics and that are radical politics and who wish that there was more of a political component to the Pride parade and to the Pride celebrations. One example of that is that this year there's an alternative Pride event, which is queer by nature. So, I mean, people are already starting to do kind of alternative or side events within these Pride celebrations to have a more political component to the whole thing. So I think that it's obvious that there's a whole whack of people out there who are wanting that and are needing that. So I think that what I'm doing this year at the front of the parade I think that people have already started to throw politics in there, but I think it's continuing that work of bringing more and more radical politics into Pride.
One thing that I wanted to talk about, I know you've been really active in the animal rights movement, and you've been active in the queer movement and the trans movement, and I wanted to talk about the difficulty you have crossing over between those two movements and, you know, like going to, you know, a queer function or a trans function where they're serving meat and, you know, having the animal rights just completely ignored and how you negotiate that and how you work with that.
Leather pageant.
Yes, leather, yeah. I had to completely, the whole time, like, I came out as queer when I was 16 years old, so that is 16 years ago. And for that whole time until this year, I have completely kept my animal rights. And I was already vegetarian when I was 16 years old, so I was already an animal rights activist and vegetarian and later on vegan during all these years. And then I was active for a long time in the diversity of social justice movement, including the queer movement, then later on the transsexual movement, sex workers' rights movement. And particularly with the queer movement and the transsexual movement, I have completely until this year kept my animal rights politics on the side. I really didn't feel that I could either raise it. I really feel that I'm not sure I could have done the work that I've done in there if I had constantly thought about my animal rights politics, because it's so all the time my animal rights politics were contradicted or were attacked, not me personally, but attacked on there were things that were being done that were completely anti-animal rights politics, or, you know, people would know I'm vegetarian, people would pass comments or snide comments about it constantly during all of these years. So I would not have been able to do the work I've done in the TS committee and the queer committee if I hadn't put that on the side. And it's only this year, because I've decided to take some distance now, and I want to move towards doing more art and filtering most of my activism through video making and performance art, that it's only this year that I feel I've had the privilege now to raising animal rights issues in the queer community, because now I'm in a position where it's more comfortable to do it and probably more safer to do. But it's been an extreme problem, like constantly having going to events where there's meat that's being served, you know, and not having people understand what that means for me, whereas if they went to a place where there was a chunk of transsexual or queer person on the table that was dead, that people were really self-righteously indulging into, they would, I mean, it would be like such an extreme kind of example of homophobia or transphobia or anything like that. Yet this is what it represents for me, and I feel as strongly when I see a piece of dead animals in any of these parties or political events than queer or transsexual people would feel if there was a murdered transsexual or queer person that was on a table and people were eating this person at a political event. I feel as strongly about animals as these people feel about queer or transsexual people, as I feel about transsexual or queer people. So I've had to really put all my emotions about it on the side, in order, otherwise it wouldn't have been possible to do any kind of significant work.
But you're finding now that you're able, or that you want to, or that you're raising these issues in a way. How do you feel that the response has been?
Yeah, well, because now I want to do most of my activism through art, so it's a different pair of sleeves. So I don't have to deal with. One thing that I find is very hard in doing political work is the community organizing, the meetings, the processing, and all that kind of stuff. So I want to move away from that, because I've done a lot of that now, and I'm not saying I will never do it again. I'm just saying, I want to do something else for a while, and doing it through video and performance art, then I can, you know, I'm not confronted with as much with the daily nitty-gritty problems of organizing with people who are doing things that I find are very objectionable.
So it's more your individual vision of,
yes,
of these things.
Yeah, and then I can choose the people that I'm working with much more. You know, I can surround myself with people who are like-minded and everything, with much more freedom and liberty, as if I was in a community setting.
Yeah. One of the most interesting films I've seen in a long time was G-Sprout, and if you could talk a little bit about that and how maybe, I mean, that's kind of an illustration of maybe the things that you're talking about. I know that it was shown at the Gay and Lesbian Film Festival last year, and it had quite an effect. So you can talk a little bit about that. It would be great.
Yeah. You were just asking before that about, and I forgot to answer that, about what the response has been from me raising animal rights issues over the last year. That when the response is very good, just a lot of people out there, like, I was scared and I didn't want to talk about it before, but since I do now over the last year, there's lots of people out there in the queer and transsexual community who are either vegetarian or who are, or if they are not vegetarian, who for all kinds of reasons have real genuine feelings about the fact that animals shouldn't be treated the way they are commodified, objectified, and murdered by billions in this culture. So there's a lot of people, since I'm more outspoken about it and I'm doing pieces that touch on that, that come to me and say, wow, you know, and there's people who come and tell me that they've become vegetarian or things like that. So that's really nice. To talk about G-Sprout, what was interesting about it is there's two friends of ours and two transsexual cultural producers in Toronto who were putting together a program about transsexual, transgender people and romance for the local lesbian and gay film and video festival, and they asked us if we could do a film to fit in that. And Mark, who's my partner, and I were thinking about it, and for me, more and more transsexualism is becoming mundane or a detail in my life. It's not something that is, I don't always have that much to talk about in relation to, I mean, I suppose I do, but it's not just what I'm about. So one of the things I thought about in relation to sexuality or in relation to romance is that the reason that that my partner and I got together is because he was vegetarian, I was vegetarian, and one of the reason I really like spotted him right away is because I really right away saw that he was genuinely had good feelings and feelings of justice for animals, and that's why we got together. And I think that one of the strongest bonds we have together is this dedication that we both have to animals. So we decided to that's part of my transsexual life and sexuality too. My transsexual sexuality is not just doesn't just revolve around me being a transsexual. It also revolves around all kinds of other aspects, you know, and including the fact that I was seeking a vegetarian boyfriend and that I found one. So we did a piece. Around that, and what was the challenge about it was that we wanted to do something that was going to be an animal rights, anti-slaughterhouse, anti-factory farm propaganda film, and at the same time do something that was going to have this romantic aspects of two vegetarians getting together in the film, and at the same time also produce sexual images, because I'm really into producing we complain all the time about the bad sexual images that are out there, so what I'm telling people is let's do some good ones, including of vegetarians laying each other in the field or wherever. So another thing I wanted to do was like, let's put together some sexual images of vegetarians together in there. So that was a lot to put together in one film and in 12 minutes, and we originally were told to do something for 10 minutes, and we ended up doing this little kind of fiction where these two vegetarians meet in a vegan romance sex cyber sex chat room on the internet, and they have a fantasy going on the internet where there are these two vegetarian historical figures from the past, and then they have a fantasy where they get it on together. So that's what we ended up doing. And so at the same time, what it's also doing, which is great, is highlighting some aspects of vegetarian history. I think this film is doing a lot. and then what we do is we mix these images of really cute and romantic caressing between him and I, mixed with the fiction, mixed with interviews, mixed with also some hardcore porn, and then mixed also with some interviews with people who are vegetarian and vegan and who talk about how being vegetarian and vegan impact on their sexuality, their choice of lovers, the problems they are having in finding lovers, etc., etc. And then we mix that with images of slaughterhouses and factory farm and abuse of animals. So that seems like, oh my God, how can they do that? So you have to see it. It's actually very well put together. And it could have been terrible, you know, like I can think of some people who might have tried to do that and it would have been like, whoa. Like I have to say that there's still a few things that we don't like about the video, but that in when we look back at it, like it's a real accomplishment to try to pull all these kinds of different issues and images of slaughterhouse mixed of animals being like killed and everything mixed with images of porn. Like it could have been a really poor and bad taste and offensive, but yet I think we did it in a way that it is working. And we had a lot of difficulty getting it shown. We were very discouraged the first 6 months the first year that the video was out. It came out over a year ago, and we submitted it to a whole bunch of festivals. We thought, oh, that's our opportunity to do animal rights propaganda in queer settings and transsexual settings, and it got refused everywhere. We submitted to all these kind of smaller queer film festivals in the United States and Canada, and it was refused everywhere, except that what happened a year after is that the big ones all jumped on it. So there's all these festivals that I actually never had my videos that I've done previously shown at that just picked it up. So there's this festival in Brazil called Mix Brazil, which is a big festival that shows a lot of experimental films and a lot of films that are really interesting because they don't just come from Anglo North America. And it's been picked up by the New York Lesbian and Gay Film and Video Festival, and it's being shown also at the Frameline San Francisco International Lesbian and Gay Film and Video Festival, and it's been shown in a bunch of other festivals too. So now we're happy a year after it's getting picked up and it's being seen. And after this film, so many people in the room came to tell us that it had such a powerful impact on them, and it really moved them, and many people said that they became vegetarian after seeing it. Some people now are coming to us and say they became vegetarian for like 2 months and then they started eating meat again. I just say, well, just go to VTape and pick up the video again. Just watch it again, or I can pass you some other one.
Now, it's interesting you're saying that a lot of like gay and lesbian film festivals have picked it up. Have any animal rights groups, have you submitted it?
We submitted it to the Toronto Vegetarian Food Fair. And we first sent an email to the coordinator last year saying, we have this video, but it contains sexually explicit images. Do you think you can show that? And he said that the sexually explicit material in it, or the transsexual aspect, because there's a transsexual naked with an erection in it, would not be a problem because they could like tell people that warn people that there's that kind of stuff going on before they go in the theater. But he had to see the film, and he seemed very interested in it. So he saw it, and he might have consulted with other people at the TVA and got back to us in an email and said that that the TV, the Toronto Vegetarian Food Fair, could not show that video because it was not enough about animal rights issues, and it was too confrontational in terms of the vegetarian people in there talking about their sexual preferences for other vegetarian people, and that it would be probably that the crowd who go to the Toronto Vegetarian Food Fair are not mainly meat eaters, and that they would be really offended by the film. So I think that they just didn't want to show it, you know, and they were coming up with a reason, which is unfortunate because I do think that it has an impact on people. And it's also a bit of a sneaky strategy to get people to the angle of sexuality, because one of the reasons we did this video too is I find this animal rights videos were becoming redundant. It was always the kind of same format, educational, highlighting the issues, always the same issues, always the same statistics being shown all the time, always the same kind of visual aspects and everything. And there's a great film, Account My Table, that came out that broke that. So we were happy when that film came out, because we were also in the planning for G-Sprout, and that's also something we wanted to do, was to do something different from how animal rights issues have been approached in the past. And with this film, we do with from the angle of sexuality.
I saw a film that was at the Gay and Lesbian Film Festival, the Inside Out Festival, just a month or two ago, and it was a documentary, Queers and Steers. I don't know if you saw
it. No, but I heard about it.
It's a half-hour documentary, and it was interesting. The few things about it, and one was that in the entire half hour, not a single person spoke about animals, like how they felt about animals or the relationship with animals, you know, even all the animals, like the horses they were riding or the steer that they were, you know, bouncing around on and all that. And the other thing was there were a few gay men, and they talked about something like, oh, you know, if straight people could see us, they'd see that we're just as masculine as, you know, the straight rodeo is. They think we're a bunch of drag queens, but we're really just as masculine. And I find that really interesting, that idea of wanting to have a piece of the power of, you know, that masculine kind of hyper-masculine identity in the gay community. What do you think about that?
Oh, that's a big topic for me. I've been talking about for 16 years, and I'm talking less about it now because I'm more and more distant and removed and less bitter about my former relationship with gay men. But I came out, as I said, when I was 16 years old, and when I came out, I came from a place of really being treated really badly during my childhood and during my my teenage years until I was 16 by people for not conforming to masculinist gender stereotype. I was a very feminine person. I didn't pass well, or sometimes not at all, as a boy, and I got treated and beaten up and abused a lot because of that by all kinds of people on a social level and in school, some in the family and everything. So when I came out, I thought, wow, you know, there's this gay and lesbian community, those are going to be nice people who are not going to be putting me in a different category or treating me badly because I'm feminine or because I'm not, you know, like a masculine man. Well, my balloon was blown very rapidly. It was not the case. I really rapidly saw that in the gay men community, there's a kind of a dominant image of men that is really masculine and everything. It's through porn, it's in the magazines that you open and everywhere, and it's also in sexuality. And what was even more disturbing for me at the time was that not only big butch masculine gay men wanted to sleep with other big butch masculine gay men, but also that the femmy ones were fantasizing about the masculine one, and that there was nobody left to enjoy the feminine one. I felt there was some kind of internalized hatred even on the part of the femmy ones. So like I couldn't even, you know, be in relationship or sleep with the femmy one. So I just thought that was a big problem, and I felt during these years that I was sort of attempting at living as a boy in this alternative category of gay men and feminine gay men and everything. And then I thought that, wow, you know, I'm doing this whole masquerade of trying to pass as a gay man and everything, and that I can't even get laid, and then this community, this sexual community, is so fucked and everything. What's the point of like identifying as a gay man if nobody wants to sleep with me, you know? And what's the point of putting up this whole masquerade and trying not to be a woman and not to be a transsexual and try to be a man if that's not even working there? So I just decided to dump the whole thing when I was 20. So I always tell people I lived as a boy from the age of 16 until 20. Those are the 4 years where I deliberately made extreme efforts to try to pass and integrate as a boy. And I couldn't do that in the straight community, but I could, I cu- I at least attempted to do that in the gay community, and I couldn't. So, of course, I came out of there very bitter about this valorization and glorification of hypermasculinity and hypermasculinist sexuality in the gay community. And it took me a lot of years to, like, not feel bitter about it. And now I'm just, like, I haven't slept with a gay man in probably, 12, 14 years, so I'm distanced from that now, so I've gotten over it. But I know that it's still a problem for a lot of men out there, and I really empathize with them.
Yeah, and it's not just gay men, too. I mean, you see, like, in the feminist movement, you know, women trying to, like, in Spain, where the bullfighting is really male-dominated, and women trying to get into that sport, you know, the same kind of thing, wanting a piece of the power without looking at who's abused and who's oppressed from that power.
Yeah, so. And using the animals in that case, you know, using the animals in the... Well, I sometimes feel the same way about the whole leather scene, you know, like where people from the leather scene want to be... seen as an oppressed minority within the queer community, not realizing like what they're wearing and what the animals went through for what they're wearing there. That to me, like, that's what I see first in terms of an oppression when I looked at it. That's why, like, I won't participate in event or do benefits for events that revolves around leather. I will do it if it revolves around S&M. That's why I wish sometimes they would just say we're from the S&M community and then some people who wear leather in there, but, like, anyways, that's not my business, that's theirs. But in the meantime, like, don't invite me to your leather event.
Yeah. Do people understand why you're saying no to those events, or do you just sort of say, you know,
when I'm not too fatigued, I explain it. Sometimes I'm too fatigued and I don't have the energy to send like a 5 pages email, so I just am too busy this week or something like that.
Has part of your reticence to talk about animal rights in the past been because of the reason that you believe in animal rights? I mean, I have felt that, and if we think we've talked about it before, just about maybe not knowing all the political correctness of it, but more having an emotional connection with the animals and feeling almost self-conscious about it. Has that been a problem for you?
Yeah, part of the reason I was not able to speak about animals for all these years, like even when I was 16 and I was very active in animal rights from 16 until 20, then I became more involved in queer and transsexual sex worker activism. Even during these years where I was mainly involved in animal rights, I was not somebody who was able to speak about it. Sometimes we'd be at a demonstration and a journalist would come to try to pick up people in the crowd. I would completely freeze. I was not able to speak about it. All I was doing at the time was holding signs, screaming slogans, licking a lot of envelopes, you know, doing a lot of the dirty kind of work, because I really felt it was too emotional for me. The idea that people could question us on something that is so basic as the fact that there are monstrosities being committed against animals in factory farms, on trap lines, in slaughterhouses, on fur farms, in laboratories. It is so obvious to me. It's mind-boggling. It angers me and makes me so emotional that somebody could have doubts about it first and could question us objecting to that. So for all these years, I was not able to speak about it because everything I felt around that was so strong and it was so upsetting and I was so emotional about it that I felt I couldn't be articulate. Now it's a different story. Like, it took me like 14, 16 years to be able to come down and be able to speak with people about it, but I feel that maybe it was a good thing that I was not doing it during this. I probably would have come across as a wacko case, you know. I would have stumbled too much and stuttered too much, whereas now I can still be nervous and upset when I talk about it, but I don't stutter. And I think that I can pin people down.
You said that you were vegetarian by the time you were 16. Can you talk a little bit about how you got into animal rights?
Yeah, I come from a very poor working class white trash family and neighborhood on the south shore of Montreal. So I grew up in a very uneducated family. My parents didn't finish even elementary school. My dad didn't know how to read and write until he was 40. So the idea of like philosophy of this or philosophy of that or political this or political that was not something at home. There were no books at home except the TV guide and things like that. You know, there was no reading done. So until I was 16, that's the kind of environment I lived in. And then by when I turned 16, I was just at home one day and our only source of information was trashy TV channels. And I was watching a TV program. There was a woman, an animal rights activist, speaking about fur, and they just showed pictures of films of animals on in traps, and oh my god, I was so upset by it. Like, it just completely changed my life. This lasted just a few minutes, these images I saw, but it was so horrible what I saw. These animals that were stuck by the legs, by the neck, were having their necks broken and everything in these traps, that I was so horrified that that all of a sudden everything that I had seen in my whole life that was horrible that human beings were committing, whether it was against other human beings or whether it was against animals, it suddenly all came to me, and I realized that there was a big problem out there. And they were announcing on this on the TV a demonstration that was going to happen against the Fur Council in Montreal. There was a bunch of big, fancy, bunch of, you know, rich, white furriers that were having a fancy meetings in some fancy hotels. There was a protest in front of it. So I went to that protest, and I was very intimidated, and I went there, and I just saw some people and everything. The majority of the people were Anglophones, and I didn't speak English at all then. So I just like was there, and then they passed a flyer for our next event, and I went to 2-3 events, and then very slow, it seemed to me like it was a very kind of close circle of people at the time that were very suspicious of anybody else joining in. So it was very difficult to sort of get my foot into it, but I kept on going. Every time they were announcing something, I kept on going, and after 6 months I created links with these people in this movement. And then there are the people who filled me with political awareness, that not just they filled me, then they started passing me flyers and talking to me about what was happening in laboratories, what was happening, you know, in terms of slaughterhouses and factory farmings, which I didn't know, but I knew there was might be something, because I asked them, because I was going to a fur demo, and I asked them, but what about meat? Do you eat meat? And one woman said, she was very nice, she says, well, I choose not to. Do you know anything about slaughterhouses and factory farms? And I didn't know anything, and she just passed me a flyer, and then I went to the library and picked up some book. And that's actually how I started to read. I had read I think a book about a prostitute when I was 13, but that was about all I had read in my whole life. So that's how I started to read, because a lot of these flyers also were in English. So I used to pick up animal rights flyers in English and vegetarian recipe cookbooks in English. And if you go in my library now, you can pick them up, and then you can look at sentences, and there's all the words in French written beside the word in English. That's how I learned English. And those people in the animal rights movement were, for a lot of them, educated people, and they're the people who have brought me to be politically aware of not just animal rights and everything that's committed in terms of horrible monstrosities against animals, but also what's happening in the world and in our dominant culture here, also against some group of human beings. So I credit these animal rights people as having brought any kind of political consciousness that I have. I link it to the work that these people have done with me. They were not condescending towards me. I was an ignorant, little, uneducated, kind of illiterate in the sense of never read anything person, and they just build me up, you know, and that's something that I really am thankful to them. And they were educated people, and I'm sure I came across as stupid and ignorant and everything often, but they were not nasty about it. They just like slowly took me on and worked me through a lot of stuff. And that's where I met my first people that were educated people. That's what brought me back to go back to school, to go to CJEP, and I even went a little bit to university. And so, like, I mean, they really had a big impact on me. And I think that the work that I've done in the 90s in the queer and the transsexual community, again, I link it to this first 1 and 2 years of involvement with animal rights people. And that's why it makes sense to me that if I'm being recognized for some work I've done in the transsexual and queer community, and they elect me Grand Marshal for that, that I would credit animal mm-hmm. liberation people in some ways to kind of close this circle of activism.
Sounds great. One thing that I want to talk about is just your involvement with Animal Voices. You've done the show for, I don't know, how many years? Was it 4 years?
I think it's 96 until 4 years.
I just wanted to know what some of the highlights were, like the best shows or the best interviews.
The worst one, too. The worst one was that when you'd ask a question, you do a pre-interview with them, and they're fantastic and everything, and then they talk a lot, and then suddenly they're on the show, and they just have nothing to say. They just answer yes or no. That was terrible, and it happened quite often. Or people we set up interviews with, and they're not there when you call them, even though you confirmed 3 times. And then, there's one guy in particular, we actually 4 times gave him a chance, because he's a high-profile activist who's always in problems with the legal system and everything. So we gave him a chance 4 times and nothing to do. Like, every time he wasn't there, it was terrible. But some of the best shows, what could they have been? I think there were shows where people were really passionate and mm-hmm. people were dedicated and passionate and radical and grounded, because with these people, when you speak with them, you don't have to worry about what's going to be the next question. They're so grounded that, like, information, resources, knowledge, and wisdom is flowing out of mm-hmm. their mouth. And it's filling you, and you are catching it, and then you don't have to think about, you know, and look at if you've written down questions on a paper or whatever. You have all these questions in your head that you're able to get back to them. So those were the greatest people. And, of course, an example that comes to mind was this Rod Coronado, mm-hmm. that was somebody who was really, really great. All the best interviews that I've done on the show that I felt was... gained so much from it, or that the people were so great, were people that I was really intimidated by. So mm-hmm. like somebody like Rod Coronado, because he's this big activist, you know, was very intimidated to interview him. But he's somebody who's so grounded, and as I said, the wisdom and the knowledge mm-hmm. and the information and the dedication is just flowing out of him. So it's just like, it's not hard to interview him. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. One of, I think, our favorite shows was Greta Garde.
Yes, I interviewed her too. It was great.
She was really great, wonderful. Yeah. You had mentioned before that you had read a lot of different people and you've been inspired by a bunch of different people, and I know that you've really served as a major inspiration for so many people in a variety of communities. And I was curious, who were the people that inspired you to mm-hmm. do the activism that you...
So again, they were all animal rights people, I have to say, but they were not the typical ones. Like, you know, like in the animal rights movement, you hear about the so-called the prophets of animal rights activism, like Peter Singer or Tom Regans. I've never read these people. These books are too complicated for me, first of all. Like, I don't have time to spend 100 hours decorticating what they're saying. And in addition to that, it's in English, so it's just too much for me. Like, I don't have the time. And the minute I read a little bit of it, I don't relate or identify with what they're saying. So the people that I related to or who inspired me were the people who came to animal rights because of the emotions and the identifications they have with animals, not people who were debating, you know, about the rights and wrongs and ethics of using animals for this or that. You know, that the kind of philosophical aspect of it is not something I'm much into, or that never inspired me. So there are people who came to there because of their emotions and compassion and strength in their beliefs that animals shouldn't be tortured, that it's just basic and simple, it's not complicated, you know. And a lot of these people, when I initially got involved with animal rights, all happened, well, not a lot of these people, all these people happened to be women. And they were all, a lot of them happened to be lesbian, and most of these, the lesbian ones, happened to be lesbian feminists. So I got the feminist piece into it at the same time in my inspiration and upbringing as an activist at the time. And there are people that are doing work, you know, that they're not big names. They don't write newspaper articles out there, you know. They don't publish books. They don't have fancy websites with nice pictures of them. Then they're just women who are very dedicated, who have true genuine feelings for animals, who know what they're doing and are grounded and have some strength in them. Like the women who inspired me when I was 16 were these women. Sometimes I remember one woman in particular, her name is Micheline Mattel. She's this French woman from France who's probably 5 foot, just looks kind of weak and vulnerable and everything, and she could take on any big 6'5" furrier or scientist. And she was so articulate and knowledgeable and strong and sarcastic in the way she talked, and she could just completely crush them just with her words. And one of these people that inspired me so much that I became aware of when I was 16 years old was this performance artist who's also an animal rights activist called Rachel Rosenthal. I started doing theater when I was 16 years old, and I went to university in an acting program when I was 20 years old. So I was very dedicated to doing theater, and that's really what I wanted to do with my life at the time. And when I read that this performance artist who came from a theater background also was doing animal rights activism and was incorporating animal rights issues within her work, I was very, very inspired by that. And then when I read about her and when I went to see her shows, because she performed in Montreal in 1987, Rachel's Brain, like, woof, I was blown away, even though I could barely understand what she was saying because my English was not too great mm-hmm. there. But I actually wrote to her at the time and asked her to send me her script, and she sent it to me, and that was easier to read than to sit down and listen to it when you don't understand English a lot. But I was inspired by her anyways.
Yeah, yeah. That's great.
Yeah.
Last night when I was talking to you on the phone, we were talking a bit about the activism that you've done and sort of moving beyond it, and part of the reason that you left Animal Voices is just you feel a need to do different things. Can you talk about that, like how you felt like you were just sort of going in a circle instead of going forward?
Yeah, like I find that I did a lot of transsexual activism, not because I was particularly interested in doing it or had a particular passion for it, just because I started doing that in a time when there was not that many transsexual people doing that kind of work then, like in the just early to mid-90s, up to even until 1997, 1998, there was very few transsexual people who were politically active in the city, if none. Or none at all. So that's why I did all that that work during that time. And then, but it was never an idea for me that that's what I wanted to do with my life. I just was doing it. Nobody else is doing it. Somebody else got to do it. So I think what I've done is spark things up. And now there's a whole whack of transsexual and transgendered people out there who are doing a whole whack of things. So I don't feel I'm as needed there anymore. So that I can go where I'm needed a little mm-hmm. bit more. And I'm going back to doing what I originally was doing until about 1992, which is to do art, and I kept on doing videos and a bit of performance from 1992 until 2 years ago. But I just want to do that full time now, as opposed to just doing it on the side when I'm not too tired from doing so much community work. So I think that personally, I find that I am much more powerful when doing activism or raising issues through performance art or video making, because I just find that I can use images, I can use metaphors, I feel I can speak about issues or represent issues or talk about issues in a deeper way, and in a way that I find I'm affecting people in a deeper manner too mm-hmm. than when I'm giving a workshop somewhere or, you know, organizing a conference or all that kind of thing, you know. So I find that I feel I can do good work there, but mm-hmm. I feel I'm stronger and I have more to contribute in doing it through video making and performance. And such, that's what I want to do now. And in order to do that, then you need to spend the time doing it, because a lot of the performances and video work I've done over the last few years was done like on the fly at 4 o'clock in the morning, you know, because I was busy more, you know, working 50 hours a week doing community work. So like the art part of it was I didn't have the time to gain skills, I didn't have the time to like figure out how to properly edit a tape, you know. So I really find now that since I'm dropping the community work and everything and I'm spending more time on doing art, that I find that just in the last 6 months to a year, either the video stuff or the performance stuff that I'm doing is much stronger because I'm taking the time to do it. And before, the reason that sometimes it was a bit weak or was not as strong as it could have been was because I didn't have the time to do it, or I didn't take the time to gather the resources to do it properly.
Have you envisioned a future project that, like a performance project or a video project that is animal rights related?
Yeah.
Are you working on anything now? Or
What I'm doing is I got a grant from the, one of the first thing I did when I dropped community work is I said, well, I need some money to do some art. So I got a grant from the InterArts program from the Canada Arts Council to do a full 75 minutes performance art show, one woman show. So that's what I'm preparing for the end of the summer. And that's what I've been working on in the last year and thinking about a lot. And it's all about, it's based on my more than decade-long experiences and political struggles as a prostitute, as a transsexual prostitute, but I'm incorporating animal rights issues in there. Now, people are probably wondering, like, how the heck can she incorporate animal rights politics with prostitutes politics? Well, you got to have her come and see it. I'm sneaky. And then in the future, I'd like to do other stuff that's more specifically about animal rights, but I think that whatever I'm doing, it's never just about mm-hmm. one thing. There's a variety of things. There's maybe sometimes, like, this show is mainly about the way prostitution is repressed in this culture and about what we go through as prostitutes from so many sectors of society and everything, but at this and the personal aspects, the political aspects and everything, but there's other things that are incorporated in there. There's not just animal rights, you know. So I can never do something that's just about one. That's, you know, when people talk about making links and everything, I'm not somebody who spend a lot of time talking about the links between things. I just prefer to do things and then the links come by themselves, you know. They're just there. You don't need to force them, or I don't need to talk about it too much. You just do something and then pop, it will pop up there, you know. You don't have to work too hard to, I don't need to make the links. They're there naturally. They come by themselves. They force themselves on what we're doing.
Yeah. Just in the break, we were talking a little bit about art, performance art, and last week on the show, Lauren and I had talked about this recent court case of three men who've videotaped and tortured cats and killed them, and it's supposedly...
There's cats, too, is an orangutan, and there's a variety of other animals.
Yeah, what we there's a publication ban, so we can't... I know, Lauren, you were there on Monday, and I was there on Monday and Wednesday for the court case, so we can't say... It's unfortunate, it's disgusting, actually. We can't talk about
the court case was bail hearings, is that right?
It was bail hearing, yes. Yeah. So we can't talk about what we heard or know from there, but there's stuff that already appeared in the media.
Yeah.
And what we know from that and what we can say, because it has been on the media and on TV all over, is that there's three people involved, Jesse Powers, another one, the last name is Winokur, and another one guy who they haven't caught, whose name is Matt. They only know his first name. One of these persons, Jesse Powers, was a student at the Ontario College of Art. He's an artist, and he claims that what he was doing, torturing and skinning a live cat, was art. So that's what we know from the media and what was already released before the publication ban. I mean, since then we know much more that unfortunately we can't talk about, but people should go to these bail hearings and court case, because it is so disgusting, and that brings up this whole issue of people who want to use animals in art. It's so disgusting. I should just clarify that so far what they know is that there was a live cat that was skinned alive in a video that they found, but all the other animals, to the exception of a chicken, were dead when they were playing with them or doing stupid things with them in the videos. And what's so disgusting, there's already been people, that's not a secret, I think people saw him around the courthouse and everything, but there's a man like Jubal Brown, who's an artist in Toronto, who showed up in the court because he's a friend of this guy, and we confronted him outside of the courthouse, and we can talk about it because there's no publication ban on that. That didn't happen in the courthouse. But outside of the courthouse, I said to him, I said, so do you agree with killing and torturing animals for the sake of art? And he said, well, no, I love animals, I'm a vegetarian, ta 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 ta. And I said, but he said, and I'm not sure he actually did it. And I said, well, if it's found out and it is proven and they show you the video that he actually did it, what will you think of this whole thing? And he said, well, I would have to find out what his motivations were. Maybe perhaps he was exploring some dark side within himself. And that's typical of some attitudes that we see amongst a certain number of artists who think that anything that people will object to what they're doing is censorship, you know. Then they bring the issue of censorship. And when these people are confronted and everything, I just find they're so ignorant, stupid, even on an artistic level. When you start talking art talk with them, what they're doing, they don't. What they're doing is stupid and ignorant, you know. It's stuff that's been done before, it's cheap, it has no depth, you know, and it's just really really outrageous. And I'm hoping that this case will spark some discussion in the arts community. I'm sorry, but all the artists out there should be speaking out. Like, we all heard about it was on the television, it was in the paper. Like, I'm hoping that artists out there, like in all these artists run center and everything, are talking about this, are deploring the fact that this guy was at the Ontario College of Arts, and are deploring the fact that some people like Jubal Brown don't think that it's a big crime to do that to animals. Mm-hmm. So I'm hoping you do a show about that in the future.
Yeah, it's a good plan.
Yeah, I think this is something that obviously gets a lot of people angry, and I think that there's been a response to that. And I think that it's confounding people, because it's not, you can't sort of understand it in terms of institutionalized exploitation, and people were saying, well, you know, and they weren't even going to eat this animal, and that kind of thing. But at the same time, I think that one of the things that gets a little bit lost is that this is the type of thing that happens every day,
uh-huh,
all the time, in slaughterhouses and in, you know, uh-huh, a variety of different places, and that gets lost. And I'm glad it gets an emotional uh-huh response, but I hope that those greater
issues
are also
brought
in.
We only have a few minutes left in the show. I just wanted to talk again about the Pride celebration. Do you still need people to join up?
Yes, we need a few people more. But what we're doing is we have a bunch of people. I'm going to be dressed up as some kind of forest goddess. I make her very vague so that nobody's upset. Anything. Some people don't like a certain goddess or another one. So I'm not claiming anyone in particular. I'm just going to do it. I'm going to be
generic.
I'm going to be a generic forest goddess.
That's good.
And I'll be in my convertible car. And some goddesses that were traditionally like hunting goddesses, some of us want to reappropriate them as protectors of animals, because goddesses and goddess mythology is really becomes what people want them to be. So if they became mm-hmm the goddesses of hunters, it's because the hunters needed a goddess, you know. So I think often we have to take back these goddesses and turn them into protectors of animals. So I'm going to have a bow, because often some of these hunter goddesses are represented with bows, but with my bow, instead of killing animals, I will be sending it. Oh, actually, I want to use a slingshot. That's true. I changed my mind yesterday. I'm no longer using a bow. I'm using a slingshot. You heard it here, up to date.
Yes, up to date. I'm going to be using a slingshot and sending into the audience this little piece of paper on which there will be a statement about how I link my activism and credit animal rights activists for what I'm doing now and what I've done over the years, and also about how these animal liberationists who liberate animals from places of tortures and abuse are people who are giving me inspiration and strength on an ongoing basis because of all the risks that these people are taking. Whenever, like in these years, I felt things were difficult or I felt depressed or down or fatigued, I thought about what these activists were going through, the risks that they were taking and everything, and it helped me put things into perspective that I didn't have it that hard after all, you know, in my little community work. And then behind the car there will be a whole bunch of people dressed up in army fatigued and everything to remind people that this is not a puppet show, that the people who are involved in animal liberations, that it's a real struggle and a revolution, and that what they get at the hands of the government is really on the level of war. And then they're going to be wearing some animal mask, and they're going to be carrying signs which highlight some of the liberations that these people have done over the last decade or two.
Sounds great.
Uh-huh. Voila.
I just wanted to remind people that CIUT will be broadcasting about the Pride March and events all weekend. And are you're doing an event in the morning? Are you doing?
I think somebody is interviewing me, but it's pre-recorded on Sunday morning. Yeah.
Okay. So Sunday morning, so you can tune into that. And that's it for Animal
Rabin,
Voices.
Rabin is interviewing
Rabin?
Me.
Rabin? Okay. Yeah. That's Sunday morning. I think it's early. I think it's like 6 till 9 or
something. But wait,
I'm
not going to be up. It's not going to be live.
Yeah, it must be pre-recorded. Yeah. So you can tune into that. You've been listening to Animal Voices. Thank you so much for being on
the
show.
Thank you.
We really enjoyed turning the microphone on you.
Yeah, it's great.